Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Happy holidays, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Hope you had a good Christmas. Looking forward to a great 2020. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you to talk about the end of 2019 and the beginning of 2020 for your Marquette Golden Eagles. And Phil, I guess we'll start just briefly on the Central Arkansas game, and then we're going to move on to talk some Big East. And then, of course, the two games coming up this week, which will be the beginning of Big East play. That would be Creighton and Villanova. As far as the Central Arkansas game goes, Phil, and just the three bye game wins as a whole, the one thing that kind of jumps out to me, just to kind of give you maybe a springboard to start with, obviously Marquette blew out Central Arkansas probably more than anybody would have hoped. So it was a very impressive offensive showing, really, by any metric, however you want to measure it. But one thing that kind of jumped out to me was the play of Symir Torrence, who got a lot more minutes in the absence of Kobe McEwen. And I think, just to, like, a first talking point for this, I think Symir is emerging as a guy who may have a bigger role in the Big East play going forward than maybe we anticipated when the season began.
Well, yeah, I think we have to see him against quality opponents, right? I mean, the vast majority of his minutes have come against suboptimal opponents. But having said that, there's still good minutes. He's getting run, and he's looked good in those minutes, especially his assists. I mean, he's had some passes that I don't know, maybe Dominic James is kind of the last player I remember making some of the passes that Symir has been making. I think what it shows us is we have considerable depth at both the guard and the forward positions that allow us both flexibility and some cushion should injuries occur, like Kobe McEwen's that forced him to sit out of that Central Arkansas game.
And what do we know about this Kobe McEwen injury? They said day to day, and you know, taking on Central Arkansas, that's a game you probably knew you could win without one of your better players. Is there a chance that he's going to be missing much Big East play? Do we know that at this point?
I don't know that we know, but I mean, he was wearing a protective, I wouldn't call it a cast, but he had like a protective plastic brace on his right thumb, which is his shooting hand. When he was sitting on the bench, I can't imagine, now this isn't the boot of years gone by, but I can't imagine that's a great sign for his quick return. We know he injured it on the Thursday before the Central Arkansas game. So that theoretically gives 6 days to rest before the Creighton game. But I don't know. If I had to call it right now, I would suspect he's probably out against Creighton and Villanova is my guess.
Yeah, I just have no idea, and I don't think anybody does, the severity of the injury. We probably won't know if he's playing until the morning of the game, honestly, or that afternoon when they tweet out starting lineups on the Marquette official account. But, you know, Kobe had his struggles offensively, but still I think is going to be an important part of this offense and this team overall if they're going to make some noise in Big East play. But that's why I wanted to bring up Symir a little bit, in case he is depended on for a little bit more because Kobe is out, or if that hand continue, even if he's healthy enough to play, if that hand continues to bother him and maybe he can't play offensively the way he would like. And I think you bring up a good point that, yeah, most of Symir's minutes have been against lesser opponents, either in garbage time when the game was decided, or just against the team that Marquette was blowing out. But yeah, I think his passing is just so crisp, and he just has a floor vision that not many Marquette point guards have had maybe in the last 15 years. You know, Junior Cadugan was a great passer, and you brought up Dominic James. He made some really nice passes, saw some highlight reel plays as well. But yeah, I really am excited about what Torrence can do over the next 3 or 4 years at Marquette. But I think he's kind of giving Wojo something to think about if he needs to make some adjustments at the point guard spot, whether because of injury or fouls or poor play.
Yeah, I think what we'll see is a little bit more of a quick hook with Kobe in conference season than perhaps we've seen in non-conference season. One, because I think Wojo was trying to let him get some minutes and try and play his way back in into what he's capable of doing. But with Samir kind of developing, I think we're going to see Kobe, you know, if Kobe's got an off night or heck, even Marcus Howard has an off night, right? Like they can rest one of whoever it is and let them get back into the flow. Certainly, I mean, you put Marcus Howard on the bench and that's not good. And I'm in no way comparing Samir to Marcus, but you at least have an appreciable offense. It's a little different than one led by Marcus, but if Marcus has to go to the bench because of foul trouble or something like that, you've at least got a manageable, relatively good offense that you can run with Samir and Kobe and Greg Elliott playing the guard spots and Sakar playing a guard spot, right? So you've got some depth there, I think, that can help you through one of those games when there's inevitably too many fouls or maybe Marcus gets dinged up, right? Like, I think the other thing, kind of going on a big long soliloquy here, is this enables you, theoretically, to keep everyone's minutes manageable so they stay relatively healthy down the stretch, right? So you can play Marcus, you know, maybe 30, 31 minutes a game as opposed to 33 or 34 a game. Something to you know, really look for, keeping the overall team healthy.
It's always good to have depth. Just, you know, because, you know, nagging injuries creep up, like something like Kobe's. Maybe it's not a major injury that keeps him out several games, but maybe something where you may want to rest him a game or half of a game or something like that. But yeah, it's good to have depth, and that was one thing I took away from the Central Arkansas game. Again, a game that Marquette won handily. There was never really in doubt. A couple interesting notes on it. Marquette's best performance of the season as far as offensive rebounding and two-point percentage, two of those trouble stats we talked about a couple podcasts ago. And the turnovers were probably Marquette's second best performance of the season. Yeah, only the North Dakota State game did they have fewer turnovers, as far as turnover percentage anyway. So do you chalk this up to an improving offense or improving team, Phil, or a decrease in quality opponent, or some mix of both?
Yeah, I'm going to say probably a combination of both. I do think that Marquette is kind of getting their feet under. I look at these things like as a trend, right? And yes, the opponents have trended downward, and as a result, the offense has trended upward. But relatively speaking, the offense has been trending upward at a greater pace than the opponents have been trending downward, which, you know, all sounds like complicated math, but really all that is in short is I feel like the team is gelling, even though the opponents haven't been that high a quality. I think when we get into conference play, certainly, you know, right off the bat, playing a Creighton and then a Villanova is going to be a major step up in competition. But I think the team collectively, you know, certainly Brendan Bailey as an example, there was a play, and in fact, I even tweeted about it. You know, he made a baseline drive that resulted in a pretty significant dunk. And it was almost a mirror image of the play he had against Wisconsin where he blew the dunk, right? And, like, that just to me is kind of a microcosm of how far collectively the team and some of the individual players have come across non-conference season is, with the exception of perhaps Kobe McEwen, everybody has gotten more confident. They're comfortable in their roles. They're playing well. So I think I take away from it just – as a whole, I think this team is confident, collected in what they want to do and where they're going. How do you feel this has worked out with the last couple of opponents?
Yeah, I don't think you can deny that the team is showing some signs of improvement. I'm with you. I kind of temper that considering the quality of competition the last three games. But anytime you win five straight, the vibe is going to be more positive than if you've lost five straight or have gone 2-3 over that five-game stretch. Marquette has won five games in a row. And yes, really only one of those games is against a KenPom top 100 team. And I'm not sure if any of the teams Marquette has played in the last five would sniff an at-large bid. Maybe North Dakota State could win its conference, but Still, it is 5 wins in a row, and I do agree that if you've been watching the games, you can see a little more confidence in the team, and especially in individual players. You brought up Brendan Bailey. I would point to Sakaar Anum. I think he looks as confident as ever as far as shooting the ball. Torrence looked very confident. He looked very comfortable out there against Central Arkansas. And again, as you touched on a moment ago, we'll see how confident he looks when he's taking on a team like Villanova. But yeah, I think there have been modest improvements, but yeah, I can't get super excited and start predicting Big East championships or things like that just because Marquette blew out Grambling and Central Arkansas and North Dakota State. So it's going to be a step up in competition this week. But, you know, if you look at Marquette's KenPom numbers as we're recording this on Monday night, you know, the metrics from last season have mostly filtered out by now, I believe. So the stats you're looking at are pretty reflective of what kind of team this is. Almost top 30 in offense, top 40 in defense, top 50 in effective field goal percentage on offense, top 10 in effective field goal percentage on defense. That's terrific. Four green numbers on the defensive side. If you're scanning the metrics, you know what I mean by green numbers, things that are reflected as very positive or well above average on KenPom compared to the rest of the country. As far as defending the three, defending the paint, block percentage, largely because of Theo John, of course, and number one in three-point percentage on offense. That is probably the biggest surprise for me compared to what I thought about this team back in early November. Pretty much, I guess you would consider a good three-point percentage maybe for an individual about 35%-ish around there.
Yeah.
Ed Morrow, Theo John, Jace Johnson have not attempted a three, so they all have zeros, of course, in their three-point percentage. Other than that, any player who has attempted a three for Marquette is at 35% or better, except for Kobe, who's at 31.9, which is not terrible, but you wouldn't call that a great three-point shooting percentage. But only Samir Torrence, of those others, he's the only one below 40%. He's at 35.7. Everyone else is 40% or better from three. So to have that many guys shooting at 40% or better from three is certainly cause for celebration over at the Al McGuire Center that Marquette has an elite three-point shooting team. Now, the two-point percentage, we've kind of beaten that to death. It's low. You know, it's still near 300. But at this point in the season, that's not going to take a huge jump, like unless Marquette has a couple games in a row where it goes like 20 for 20 from the field at two-point percentage or something. It's going to be low all season. Now, maybe you can kind of chip away at that and have a decent number by March. But Marquette does not get many of its points in the paint, and you know, some of the rough showings early on are going to weigh that number down. You're just going to have to, again, chip away at it as we get onward into Big East play. But the three-point percentage is something worth celebrating, I think. And I think that's a credit to the coaching staff. That's maybe something they've worked on in player development. And just it's still in kind of that confidence in their players. They, you know, you have this three-point shot. This is something we've worked on. Don't be afraid to take it. And you see guys like Sakaar Anum and Jamal Cain and Brendan Bailey stepping out there and shooting the three confidently, and it's yielded pretty good results.
Yeah, well, and further context around the significance of that three-point shooting percentage as a team, and I had kind of forgotten about this until I was reading a Seth Davis article on the Atlantic, the Atlantic. It's a whole other
that would
magazine.
Have been a surprise if he's writing for the Atlantic.
Yeah, on the Athletic, I had forgotten that they had moved the three-point line back this season, and overall, collectively, in college basketball, three-point shooting percentage is down by 2.5%. So, collectively, everyone else is shooting worse, and Marquette has not only not shot worse, they're actually shooting better than they did last year. So, I mean, at this point, you have to say it's not a fluke. I mean, yes, we could still have games where we're not hitting threes, but based on shot selection and confidence, this team is taking and making good, high-quality shots, which really is what you want out of this offense, right? Like, it doesn't need to be flashy as long as they're making good shots and good choices. And that in turn feeds the defense, right? Because where Marquette gets into trouble is if they get into a running game where Marquette's thrown up a lot of bricks and the other team gets some runouts and the half-court defense can't get set. So they kind of, you know, whereas the half-court defense feeds the offense as well, where if the opponent's not making baskets, then Marquette's getting the rebound and getting a bit of a head start as well. So they kind of feed each other, but I think the ultimate point is that the three-point shooting percentage is probably, you know, representative of what it's going to be all season. So if they can do even anything around the two-point percentage, this offensively could be a pretty dominant team.
Yeah, it's sustainable. And by that, will it necessarily be 42.7% as a team for the entire year? Maybe that's optimistic, but I don't think Marquette's going to fall out of the top 100 in the nation in three-point percentage. I mean, it's going to be good all season. Like, they're not going to forget how to shoot between now and March. Yeah, some of the shots may come a little tougher in Big East play, so maybe that team percentage takes a dip, but it's not going to take a nosedive. So that is who this team is. They are an excellent three-point shooting team, and that's a way that they are going to generate a lot of offenses with a three-point shot. Of course, still a lot of it from Marcus Howard, and that's okay with me. But the good fact is he's got guys around him now who can hit shots, and they now are giving opponents other things to think about. It's not, we're just going to double-team Marcus Howard on the perimeter and dare other guys to beat us, because that's going to be a bad strategy. Because Sakar and Brendan Bailey and Greg Elliott, they have shown that they can beat you with a three-point shot as well, so you can't leave those guys open either.
Right.
So Wojo has options.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the key, is that we have options.
Right. Right. Other scores are emerging, and that's a positive sign. And the defense is sustainable, too. You know, like I said, there's a lot of green numbers on KenPom. You look at Marquette's defensive metrics. They're good defending the three, defending the paint. Opponents aren't shooting great from the free throw line for what that's worth, and they're getting a lot of block shots. So the only thing they're not doing well is turning opponents over. You'd like to see a little bit more of that, force a few more turnovers, get some easy buckets in transition. But again, that's a number that you're just going to have to chip away at, because it's some of the rough showings early on are going to weigh you down, like I said earlier about the team two-point percentage. So if you want to see one area of improvement for the defense, you'd like to see maybe some of those guys on the perimeter get a few more steals, get their hands in the passing lanes, force a few more turnovers, and get some easy buckets on the other end. Because Marquette has guys who can finish on the break. Jamal Cain, Sakar, these guys can finish in transition. There's no doubt about that. Ready to move on to Big East play. Let's take a look at the Big East as Big East play began on Monday night. And we are kind of recording this during the Seton Hall DePaul game, so we won't know the result of that, although I do have it on my television as I'm talking to Phil here.
Ditto.
But we do know Villanova is 1-0. So Villanova got conference season off to a 1-0 start with a win over Xavier on Monday night. And again, there's more games that will be played between the time we record this and you guys listen to it. But how do you want to break down the Big East, Phil? I think we were kind of talking off air, and I think this is maybe a good way to go about it. Maybe some teams that, based on what they've done in the non-conference, have impressed you, have been exactly what you would expect, and maybe a team that you are unimpressed with and maybe not as concerned about as maybe you were back in November. Want to go at it? Let's go at it in that manner.
Yeah.
Let's start. What is a team that is better than you thought they would be back in November?
Well, I think the number one answer here is DePaul, right? Like, I mean, how many jokes did we make at DePaul's expense during the Big East preview? And I think, you know, right now we'll see. They obviously, like DePaul, DePaul of years past, they've played a relatively soft non-conference schedule, so they may be smoke and mirrors. But, you know, they still played the hard teams and were either competitive or won. They've only got one loss.
They have three wins over Big Ten teams.
Yeah.
Got to give them that.
And the Big Ten is supposedly the best conference per KenPom, is the best conference in the country.
Yeah, they've beaten Minnesota, Iowa, and where's the other Big Ten? Northwestern. So it's not bad.
The Iowa is the most significant of those, right? That's probably the best win on their schedule
I would guess so. But flat out. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I would say this about DePaul. I don't know how many wins they're going to get in league play. Again, we're recording this during their game against Seton Hall, and I'll say it's competitive. Whether they win or not, I'm impressed that they are competing. And I'll say this, you know, in years past, when you lose to DePaul, it's like a season ender, right?
Right.
Like, if you lose to DePaul, like, you feel like, well, that is something that really screws us as far as a tournament. We're probably not going to, like, I feel like the past few times Marquette has lost to DePaul, it felt like the season was over. If Marquette loses, I'm not saying they will, but if Marquette loses to DePaul this season, yeah, we're going to be pissed about it, but it's not going to be a season-crushing kind of loss. It'll be like, well, I'm pissed we lost that, but now we got to rebound. We got to bounce back from that. Like, would you, like, losing to DePaul, while not great, is not catastrophic this year, I don't think.
Yeah, so I think the way I would put it is, like, in years past, there were two elements to a loss to DePaul. One, you just hated to lose to a rival and or DePaul, like, just because they're DePaul. And two, because they were always a bad team, a bad RPI loss, or in the new era, a bad, you know, like a quad three, quad four loss. This year, and I'm trying to look it up real quick, but I would think as of right now, they're a quad one road win and they're a quad two home win. So, you know, that's quality, that they are a quality opponent based on how they're performing right now.
Yeah, so I would agree that DePaul is one of the teams that maybe I think more highly of now than maybe I did back in November. My answer to that question, I'm just going to go with Butler, because yeah. Butler's had a great non-conference schedule, only one loss entering Tuesday. They open up Big East play at St. John's on New Year's Eve. They're top 10 in KenPom. Their defense is top 10 in the country, offense top 20 in the country. Like, Butler's a program you always have respect for and always assume is probably going to find their way into the top five in the Big East more seasons than not. But I now look at Butler as a Big East title contender, if not the favorite. So that is a team that has maybe impressed me a little more than maybe what I thought of them in the preseason. In the preseason, I would have thought maybe Butler might be a team a tad behind Marquette, but now I'm thinking Butler might be the team to beat in the league.
Yeah, I would say it really comes down to Butler or Villanova, who I think, and I can't, and this is reflective of both perhaps a little, how Nova has been a little underwhelming, just a touch, versus Butler has certainly been significantly better than I thought. I'm hard placed to think which Butler or Villanova, which one I'm more worried about to win the conference, right? That's that Butler has just been playing well, and I mean, they're right now by the NCAA rankings, the net rankings, they're four. I mean, that doesn't happen by accident or luck.
They have lot of power conference wins. They've beaten Minnesota, Missouri, Stanford, Mississippi, Florida, and Purdue. So, like, maybe none of those are necessarily Final Four contenders, but to have that many wins over power conference teams, their only loss was a one-point loss to Butler, and that was a road game – or Baylor, I should say. Their one loss was a road loss to Baylor, who is also close to top 10 in KenPom. They're number 11 as I'm looking at this right now. So, yeah, Butler's great, well-coached. They always are, and, you know, Kamar Baldwin's going to be in the – Big East Player of the Year race, maybe even the National Player of the Year race. He's, you know, he's number 10 on KenPom's National Player of the Year rankings right now. So, yeah, I've been impressed with Butler. Always been impressed with them as a program, but they are better than I thought they would be this season. So, they have more depth than I anticipated them having.
Agreed. They're not all Kamar Baldwin, right? They've got pieces.
I mean, you look at their KenPom numbers. There's a lot of green there. I mean, they're good, effective field goal percentage, both offensively and defensively. They shoot the ball well from three. They defend it well on the perimeter and in the paint. Top 20 in two-point field goal percentage. Just a really, really tough team. So we have Butler and DePaul as kind of our teams that have impressed us. What's a team that is exactly maybe what you thought they would be when the season began, Phil?
I think probably Creighton is. In that, I think they're a quality opponent, but I also don't think they've impressed necessarily. Again, I think some of this is a factor of their schedule. And we'll get into more detail on Creighton. But I think Creighton is where I thought they would be. I think they're going to be a middle of the pack Big East team that's capable of beating the top teams, but is also capable of losing to the bottom teams.
Yeah, I think that that's probably pretty fair. Creighton, solid, but not elite in the Big East, in other words.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. My answer is Villanova, because, you know, before the season, I would have thought a Big East title contender, not a Final Four contender or a national championship contender, but a team that could climb the rankings and maybe get into the top 10, and I think that's about where they are, the AP poll right now. I think they were 10 or 11 when it came out.
I think they're 10.
On Monday. Their only losses, you know, granted, one of them was, I mean, they got hammered by, but it was by Ohio State, who has hammered a lot of teams this year, and they also have a loss to Baylor, but that was on a neutral court. And then they, you know, they went out and beat Kansas, number one team in the country, last Saturday on the 21st. And then they've opened Big East play with a win over Xavier. And I just think they have some youth that is really kind of scary to me, that I think could be a lot better. I mean, we all know about Sadiq Bey because he was really good last year as a freshman. I've talked about Jeremiah Robinson Earl before. Just, you know, a potential lottery pick, honestly, as a forward. If not this year, maybe next year. But, I mean, he's a guy who probably would be in the NBA draft this coming season. His dad played at Kansas. Justin Moore is a guy I saw a few times last year as a high school senior who I was really impressed with. And he can really shoot the ball, and he's emerging kind of as a go-to scorer for them. You know, a lot of the guys they've had coming back, like Jermaine Samuels is good, Gillespie's been good. So, I mean, they have the depth that I anticipated. I know that Villanova has the best coach in the Big East. So Villanova is about where I would have picked them to be at this point in the season, with a loss or two, but still solidly one of the contenders, if not the top contender, to win the Big East.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
So, yeah, so I put Villanova way up there, and we kind of agree that, you know, are Villanova and Butler the two top contenders for the Big East right now?
Yeah, I think so. I would say they're
the only two in the AP top 25 poll. But interestingly, nine of the teams in the Big East, so nine of the 10, received at least two votes in the AP top 25 poll, which I thought was interesting. So everybody except Providence received a vote.
Yeah, and that Providence not getting a vote may come up in a later part of this conversation.
Yeah, so moving on to the next part of the conversation, who's the most disappointing team, or maybe a team that you are not as concerned about as maybe you were when the season began?
Well, I'm going to leave. I just hinted at it. I definitely want to say Providence, but I mean that it's not fair. That's a real obvious one, right? Like, just now, Providence can be dangerous at times. I think they've proven, you know, been able to win a couple of games that people had written them off in. But I don't think they're anywhere near what we thought they might be. I think we're a little more used to Providence, not necessarily reloading, but certainly not taking steps back. But I actually, for this one, and I know I'm using two, but I really want to say Georgetown. Like, I know people have kind of said, oh, yeah, they had the turmoil and the roster turnover and the drama of players being kicked off the team and or transferring, and they're still playing well. But, again, I think much like last year, their performance to date with their new roster is based largely on the schedule that they've had. I think when Georgetown gets into conference play, I think they're really going to find some tough sledding. I just don't think they have – the talent top to bottom to be able to play in the Big East day in, day out.
You stole mine, because that's where that kind of the direction I was going to go. I was going to say this might be something that comes back to bite me and something that I regret, but I was kind of got to go Georgetown as well, because, you know, in the preseason I thought Georgetown was up and coming, and that Georgetown would be a team that would maybe elevate to the top five or so of the Big East, because, you know, they had guys who could score. A Kenjo was a guy I thought was going to be a really dynamic player in the Big East this year. And, of course, they had that situation where they had a few guys charged with assault or alleged assault, and they had to kick them off the team. But, to their credit, they did bounce back very well. I mean, they didn't just beat Cupcakes coming immediately after that. They beat Oklahoma State, SMU, and Syracuse. and two of those were on the road. So, I mean, those were three nice wins. Anytime you beat Syracuse, it's a nice win for Georgetown. Anytime you beat your rival, but, you know, they beat them by 10 points, so that was a great win. But, yeah, since then, yeah, they've blown out three opponents, but it was UMBC, Samford, and American. But I agree with what you said there, that Georgetown is playing well, and I think they have kind of rebounded from the situation of losing guys on the team. But I just kind of wonder if it's a bit of fool's gold and if, like, they're just going to run out of gas eventually. Like, they only have, like, seven scholarship players right now?
Correct.
Something like that? That depth has got to catch up to you. Because you get one more injury or, you know, just a guy who's not playing well, it's hard to hide that. Because there's only really two guys plus walk-ons on the bench. That's all you got.
So, right.
Even though Georgetown is playing well right now, I have to concede that. I mean, they're top 20 in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency, and their defense is top 100. So obviously there's something there. So they could be really good. And that, again, I could regret all of this, and they could be a team that trips up Marquette at some point this season. But I kind of agree with what you said there, is that I am concerned that Georgetown's going to run out of gas over the course of a grind of an 18-game Big East schedule.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it develops. I mean, I also don't have a lot of faith in somebody like Patrick Ewing as a coach, right? Like, maybe he I mean, I'm not saying he's
without
talent.
I got to give him credit that he's got his team to bounce back and not quit, because I could have easily seen them going, you know, 2-4 after those players left.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I agree with what you're saying. I'm not ready to slap the coaching genius label on him yet either. Because after the loss to UNC Greensboro, Georgetown fans were saying, God, are we going to have to fire our guy? You know, like, he's our guy. He's Patrick Ewing. We can't fire him, but are we going to have to? It's going to be like a Chris Mullin St. John situation. But he's, again, the team has rebounded. Maybe they will have a nice – if Georgetown goes 500 in the Big East or even – you know, 8-10, I think that'd be a hell of a season for them to pull that off. But we'll see where they go. But again, my concern is their depth over 18 Big East games. I think that is going to be extremely, extremely difficult. But
yeah, there's rumblings in news reports and stuff that the NCAA is looking to tighten up foul calls, that things have gotten slack. So, you know, depth, you know, either from injury or foul trouble or just, you know, the grind of the Big East season when you're playing three games in 8 days or something like that, right? Like, that's going to wear on a team. I just don't think they have staying power the whole season.
So what is your gut as far as where Marquette is in the Big East pecking order as we begin conference play?
I mean, my gut is really to say that they're probably third. I would put them behind Butler and Villanova. I would definitely put them ahead of Seton Hall. Now, Seton Hall's a little under strength. Miles Powell is back now. He's playing against DePaul, but they're without their big man, who I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce his name. Their second best player on their roster. So, and Marquette will catch them before he comes back. So, I don't know. I put Marquette three. Where would you put him?
You don't want to say Mamu Kalishvili? I don't know, I'm not sure I even said that right. But
right. I'm Mamu. I don't want to say Mamu. Yeah.
But I kind of agree with you that I feel comfortable saying around three. I would not rule out a Big East championship run for this Marquette team.
No.
You know, like, even though I would put Butler and Villanova ahead of them, like, I think in the end it might only be a game or two ahead of where I think Marquette could be based on what I've seen. But I also would not be totally shocked if Marquette gets caught in a cluster of teams around 500 in the middle of the Big East and, you know, ends up with the sixth seed in the Big East tournament.
Yeah, I think Marquette can, on a game-by-game basis, I mean, I am absolutely not predicting an undefeated Big East conference season. But what I'm going to say is, every game, Marquette can win every single game, right? Like, there's no team in the Big East where I'm like, oh, you know, like Villanova last year, right? I was pretty convinced we were going to lose to Villanova both games, or even 2 years ago, right, when they won the national championship. That just felt like, oh, we're probably not going to win. Every game I go in it with at least the feeling, hey, we definitely could win this game, right?
Yeah, man, you play your optimistic card. You may predict a win on every, you know, before every game on this podcast going week to week.
Yeah, hey, who knows? That could come up real awkward. But yeah, I have a oddly confident feeling about this team that they will be. I mean, they're going to have a clunker or two, but I think they're going to be very competitive.
For sure. I mean, you're not going to against teams of similar talent levels, you're not going to play 18 games and win 16 of them. I just...
Right.
No. But, yeah, but I do kind of agree with you that there is not a game on the schedule where I say absolutely no way in hell Marquette can win that game. Like, yeah, like going to Butler is going to be extremely tough. Going to Villanova, always extremely tough. Playing at Xavier, and maybe even, yes, at DePaul this year. Always going to be tough, all those road games. But, you know, if Marquette can hold serve at home, hopefully win 8 or 9 games at home, and break 500 on the road, or maybe a tad below, 4 and 5 on the road, that's probably going to be enough to have a very, very good Big East record and have a decent seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think because the Big East overall is general. I mean, the only theoretical layup is Providence, and even then, I mean, you can make some arguments that they're competitive from time to time. St. John's is probably the other layup, so to speak.
Yeah,
but
yeah, those Providence or St. John's are kind of the two teams you're looking at as teams you can sweep,
right?
Like, because you know, if you want to compete for the Big East title, you've got to sweep a couple teams. Right. Providence, yeah, they've got some pretty messy losses this year, but then they went out and they just blew out Texas on, you know, before Christmas. So I don't know exactly what to think of them. We'll get a good look at them against Georgetown on New Year's Eve, so maybe we'll learn something about those two teams. But yeah, I mean, before Texas, there was really nothing impressive about Providence's wins. Sacred Heart, NJIT, St. Peter's, Merrimack, Pepperdine, and Stony Brook were their wins. But then, you know, after that, a 22-point win over Texas, who, again, maybe not one of the best teams in the Big 12, but certainly a team that should have a shot at making the tournament. That makes you scratch your head. So, well, is Ed Cooley's team figuring it out again, as they often do as seasons tend to grind along? Maybe we'll learn a little bit more about Providence. But, yeah, I would agree with you that Providence or St. John's are probably the two teams that you're looking at the schedule saying, okay, those are the two teams that we could sweep, and if we can kind of split home and home with just about everybody else, be great to get a sweep against DePaul too, then maybe you're feeling really good about contending to be in, you know, top three or better in the Big East.
Yeah, because I think it's clear to say that there's not a single dominant team, right? Or even two dominant teams any
given
night.
Yeah, I would be shocked if the Big East champ has 15 or more wins.
I was just going there. I was going to say, how many wins do you think it's going to take to win the Big East? I think it's probably in the 13-14 range is what the eventual winner is.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm thinking. Maybe 13, you could possibly win it, maybe even share it with 13 wins. I think 14, you would win it outright.
Right. Yep.
I think that's where I would ballpark it right now. So that would be my guess. So why don't we talk about Marquette's first two Big East games before we get out of here? So Marquette will begin Big East play on New Year's Day against Creighton. And this will be a road game. Ken Pom has Marquette as a slight dog in this one. Again, like we were just talking about, Phil, you know, if you go game by game and just look at the matchups, you could always talk yourself into Marquette winning these games. Creighton, an elite offense, top 20 in the country. Defense, not bad, but not outstanding. They are right at 100 in the country. So, good, you know, decent defense, but not as good as Marquette's. This is a winnable game, I think, Phil. I think of the two teams, Marquette is playing this week, this is the lesser one, but the fact that it's on the road makes me think this may be the tougher game. How do you see the matchup with Creighton?
Yeah, I think the things that's one is kind of a gut feeling, and two is statistical. The two things that kind of stand out to me, the fact that it's the first road game for Marquette in essentially, I guess since December 7th, so it's a little over 3 weeks. And it's against Creighton, in the new Big East, the last time we had a New Year's Day game against Creighton, at Creighton, it did not end well. and the ghosts of last year. Again, none of this is all gut feel, right? This is all bad juju from the past that gives me pause for concern. Because on paper, I think Marquette has a really good shot of winning this. I think one of the things, when you look at the matchup, Marquette's probably biggest weakness, I would say, is turnovers, right? Committing turnovers. Creighton doesn't force a lot of turnovers. Now, that doesn't mean that Marquette can't outdo itself and turn the ball over a lot to Creighton. But the matchup in terms of the style Creighton plays, they're not great at three-point defense. They don't turn people over. So that's Marquette's greatest strength is going to be really good, strong against Creighton, and their greatest weakness is not necessarily going to be exploited by Creighton. That tells me I should feel good about the game on paper.
Creighton also not great at defending the paint. One of, almost 300 in the country as far as block percentage, so they're not going to block a ton of shots. They're not a very tall team. Right. I mean, this is a game I think where really Marquette's bigs can go to work. If you can get the ball into Theo or Jace or Ed, you may be able to get some easy buckets. And if you can get some guys driving at the rim, you may be able to get a few, because Creighton is not one of the best as far as two-point percentage defense. They're ranked 180th in the country, so not a terrific number there. Defending the perimeter, they're a little better. They're 80th there. Again, their defense overall, 100, so fine, but not elite. So this is a game where Marquette's offense, you would hope, maybe could have another strong showing, because this is not one of the best defenses in the Big East. But this is also a game where you could fear that if you struggle offensively, it could get away from you quickly, because Creighton does shoot the ball well. Not as well as Marquette, but still very well, very good, 37.6% as a team. And their offense overall is top 20 in the country. So that would be my concern, just in a road gym, like, even if it's not because of the Creighton defense, but just Marquette just does not shoot the ball well because it's unfamiliar rims, that their offense doesn't get going and Creighton's does. And if that happens, that would be my concern, that Creighton could build up a big lead that would be tough to come back from.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think there is a path certainly to a loss. I mean, it'll be interesting to see who guards Creighton's best player in Marcus Zagorowski. You would think if Kobe's fully healthy, it probably is Kobe, but maybe they put Sakar on him. Because again, like you said, there's not a lot of height across the board for this team. Plus they're not terribly deep, right? They seemingly go at best probably 8 deep, maybe 9 deep in a worst case scenario. But, they're not bringing height off the bench and stuff like that. So I think if Marquette can keep its cool and stay collected, and Creighton's going to be streaky, right? I mean, they might go on a 9-2 or 10-1 or 10-3 run, something like that at some point. And Marquette's just got to stay steady and keep guarding strong and keep working the offense. And again, Creighton will go cold as well. So I think that's going to be the key, is does Marquette withstand the kind of the Creighton runs that are probably going to be there in this game?
And I think my biggest key is going to be in the paint. I kind of touched on it earlier. I think it could be a big day for Theo John and Jace Johnson, not just offensively, but on the offensive glass, getting second chance points, getting it back out to the shooters and getting second chance buckets. Best time to shoot a three is after an offensive rebound. And if Marquette can continue to make strides in that department, one of their weaknesses on the season, but considering the height or lack thereof of Creighton, I think there will be a good opportunity to get more offensive rebounds and get more second chance points. And hopefully that leads to a few more wide open threes, and that could be the difference in the game. So I'm going to dare to put on my optimistic hat and say that Marquette can go on the road and get a win in Omaha. Because I think Marquette's offense is good enough that it can get going against an average Creighton defense. And Marquette's defense is strong enough that can show it maybe can slow Creighton's offense down just enough to squeak out a win. Very close, coming down to the final shot, maybe a 1 or 2 point win, but I'm gonna dare to be optimistic, Phil. I'm a little scared about it, but That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say Marquette can go on the road and win on New Year's Day.
Okay. All right. I like the optimism because I'm actually going the other way. It has nothing to do with paper, right? Like I every reason, just intuitively on paper, I think Marquette should win. I agree with your analysis. I'm just looking at maybe the psychological elements, and maybe it's just shows you what a fragile psyche I have. But I just look at the combination of road game against Creighton, kind of the haunted by the Sam Hauser tie, you know, shot at the end of regulation to send it into overtime last year that maybe shouldn't have counted, and some other things. New Year's Day, I just the general, we've been talking about how good this Marquette or how pretty good this Marquette team is. It would be classic get a loss right out of the gate in Big East play to kind of set everyone back on their heels and unleash the angry Twitter trolls that have been out there. So yeah, I think this is going to be a close, but I think Marquette's going to lose this one.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The thing is, I feel like I'm going to predict like two wins this week. Like I'm going to do like the KenPom thing and predict game by game two wins, but acknowledge that it's probably wrong and say they're going to be 1-1.
Yeah, I certainly like, think it's going to be 1-1 is my guess.
Yeah. Like I think if you come away from this week 1-1, you feel pretty good about it and you just move on and go to the next one. But Marquette is, if you're going game by game, Marquette is projected on KenPom to have a bit of a rough start to Big East play, but rebound and still I think they're predicted at 10-8 right now, but love to see that number get closer to 11 or 12. But so on Saturday, January 4th, Marquette will have its home Big East opener against Villanova, who we mentioned beat Xavier in its Big East opener on Monday night. Villanova, obviously, extremely well coached. They've got depth. Their offense is elite, top 10 in the country. Defense is very good. They're in the top 100, not ranked as highly as Marquette's, but still ranked 77th in the country as I'm reading this on Monday night. Again, I'm trying to put on my optimistic hat, and just the fact that it's a home game for Marquette, Phil. I'm cautiously optimistic that Marquette can grind out a win against Villanova, who I believe is, you know, like top 10 or 11 in the AP poll. How do you feel about the matchup with the Wildcats?
I feel pretty good about the matchup. I think Villanova has been good. I don't think they've been outstanding. And again, this is another team that doesn't have a lot of depth. Marquette can, you know, if the game is physical, there's fouls or a lot of up and down, I think Marquette has the advantage there. I also think that in key places, I have no doubt that Villanova has tremendous talent, but I think in key places, that they've got, you know, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, like you mentioned, is a wonderful talent, but also just a freshman. And I think, you know, there's just something to some of the, no, Villanova has played in big games, obviously in non-conference, they played Kansas and amongst others. But I just think it's going to be a tough environment for Villanova. And I think Marquette has a good shot in this one.
Oh, they absolutely have a shot. I think Marquette should feel it has a shot. Marquette should enter every home game thinking it's going to win, honestly,
right,
in Big East play. When it comes to the matchup with Villanova, yeah, I guess they probably play about eight guys, but they're eight pretty talented guys. Like everyone contributes, so it's not like they're running 10 or 11 guys out there, but every guy that runs out there in the eight can really contribute, and there's not much drop-off. They shoot the ball pretty well. They're better in the paint than they are from the perimeter. They shoot 35% from three. They're top 20 in the country though in 2-point field goals on offense at 55%. So they're going to look to get in the paint. So that's going to be a challenge for Theo John, is kind of redirect some of those shots at the rim and try to limit the touches for Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who is not quite as big as Theo is, but he's a very athletic big, and again, he's a guy that NBA scouts like a lot. He's about 6'10", 230, so, and he's got pretty decent shooting touch as well, so you know, keep an eye on JRE there. But defensively, Villanova's numbers are not like elite. If you go like through like all the metrics overall, yeah, they're top 100 in the country, which is fine. But they're not great defending the three. They're not great defending the 2-point shot. They don't get a ton of steals. They don't get a lot of blocks. All those numbers are just basically average on defense, average to bad. Honestly, their effective field goal percentage on defense is rated 207. So, I mean, that's not good at all. So this is a defense that I think Marquette can do some damage against. I think they, if Marquette's offense can continue to make strides, especially if Kobe McEwen's back, I think they can put some points on the board against Villanova and, you know, get this game into the 70s, maybe even touch 80 in this game. And that's why I'm optimistic that Marquette can beat Villanova.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because you know, Villanova has struggled to against good defenses. Their offense has been, no doubt, you know, it's per KenPom, it's 7 in the country. But their offense has struggled when they've played quality defenses, right? They've played Kansas, Ohio State, Baylor. They lost the Ohio State game, lost the Baylor game, almost lost the Kansas game. You know, and Marquette isn't quite those defenses, but they're solid. So to your point, if Marquette's offense can outpace Villanova's defense, Marquette's defense should be able to at least restrain Villanova's offense enough that Marquette can outscore them. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think this is going to be, you know, in the 50s. I would expect this to be in the high 60s, low 70s is going to be my guess for a score. I suspect if the scoring for these teams is in the 50s, that Marquette actually loses. But I would look for Marquette to be scoring in the high 60s, low 70s against Villanova. And kind of win in a shootout.
I'd be curious to see how Marquette defends the combination of Sadiq Bey and Jeremiah Robinson Earl.
Yeah,
because I mean those are two tall, athletic forwards, both who have pretty decent, you know, good to great shooting touch. I mean, Bey can hit it from the outside.
You saw that last year, right? Bey went ballistic that one game.
Yeah. Yeah, Bay can really score. I mean, he's a guy, like, if he gets hot, he's really scary. But, with two guys about 6'8", 6'9", who can score inside and out, that would be a tough matchup. That may be something that Villanova tries to take advantage of. We'll see how they kind of attack it. But that's something I'll be interested to see how Marquette defends them on Saturday. By the way, don't forget there was – sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, though, the one thing, you know, kind of being you being a JRE aficionado, I mean, to your point, the inside-out game for both Bay and Robinson Earl, you know, could put some stress on players like Theo John. It's been a little opposite of the way Marquette's operated, but how do you think – what do you think about the idea of Theo and to a certain extent Ed and Jace playing through them in the post and trying to get, you know, Bay or Robinson Earl into some foul trouble, forcing them to guard in the post a little bit more?
May not be a bad idea. You know, like certainly with Theo and Jace too. I mean, they've both got some size on Earl and Bay, so he could probably muscle those guys around. Now, their fouls per 40 are both pretty good. I mean, both right around 3 or lower. I mean, Sadiq Bay is at 3.1 and Robinson Earl's at 2.5. So Robinson, at least thus far, has really not gotten in much foul trouble. So if you can get those guys in foul trouble, it's probably going to be something Villanova's not used to. And then they would kind of have to go with a smaller lineup and get out of their comfort zone a little bit. I guess they would have to go smaller and they'd be playing. Cosby Roundtree would probably come in and get a few more minutes. He doesn't play a ton, but he'd kind of be the next man up, kind of playing in the post there. So, yeah, if you think you can get a friendly whistle and get those guys in a bit of foul trouble, that would really throw them off. Because looking at Villanova's most frequently used lineups, Jeremiah Robinson Earl is in all of them. So they very rarely play anybody other than him at the 5. And then Bay can slide in there as well. And Cole Swider, I guess, plays a little bit in the five when Robinson Earl needs to sit with fouls or just needs a breather. But other than that, but yeah, just to get those guys out of their rhythm, if you can get that friendly whistle, yeah, that's something you're just going to have to get a feel on game day, what kind of whistle you're going to get. But certainly not a bad idea.
It's a great idea if you can do it, right?
Yeah, if you know exactly how it's going to be called, yeah, that's an advantage, but that's something you just got to figure out on game day. The other thing I was going to say a minute ago, don't forget there will be, at last I checked, there is still planned to be a special guest in the crowd from Marquette, Kareem Main, who is a five-star guard in the 2020 class, a kid from Canada. Last I checked, his official visit is still scheduled for Saturday.
That is correct as of the last time.
Against Villanova. So, hey, if you see some Canadian flags in the crowd or if Marquette decides to play the Canadian anthem before the game, you'll know why. But
Or have the colors presented by the Mounties.
Whatever makes him feel right at home, that's what Marquette is going to do. But hopefully the Marquette fans can show him what a Marquette crowd is all about, what it's like to be at a home game at Fiserv Forum, and he feels right at home. And if he does end up going to college, hopefully Marquette will be right at the top of his list. You know, last I checked, I think Marquette is the only official visit he has planned. Now, he has a lot of other schools that are trying to get his attention, get him on campus for visits, but we'll see. If you're not keeping up with him, I say if he goes to college, because I guess he is technically NBA draft eligible, and he can apply for eligibility, because I guess he's 19 and has been, I guess he's at a prep school in Canada, so he could Thon Maker did and not go to college at all. He's been in prep school long enough that he can just go straight to the league and get drafted. So he may enter the NBA draft, but he has said, for what it's worth, he would like to go to college first. So Marquette is kind of first in line to show him what a college atmosphere is like. So hopefully he gets a good taste of that and has a good experience at Marquette in Milwaukee on Saturday. And be great if Marquette gave a verbal commitment, but I wouldn't expect any kind of commitment until the spring. But that's just something to be aware of, is that there will be an important visitor in the crowd for the Nova game. Wouldn't be surprised if the other the guys who have already signed visit either, because Marquette loves to get their recruits on campus for games like this, and I'm sure they've probably given calls to Dawson Garcia if he's available, if he can come up on Saturday, if Justin Lewis can get in from Baltimore. Voso can come up from Arizona. You'd love to have your guys who are already committed on campus to meet the recruits and say, hey, it's going to be all of us together. Let's run it back in the gym a few times and see how you feel about us as teammates and get to know each other a little bit and get a sense of the future. So who knows, maybe multiple guests in the crowd, but Kareem Main is the one that will be on an official visit on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully some of the students come back, because that's the only downside of the
yeah, time, I forgot about that. Yeah,
the date of this game is now. It's it's the fourth. It's the biggest game that's going to be played in the Fiserv Forum to date, right? Like, so come back and put butts in seats, and the non-student crowd should be very full and very excited. So I know I will have a very excited four-year-old there screaming his head off. So it'll be a good atmosphere, I hope.
Are the students back on the 5th, or are they back the following week?
I think they're back the following week.
That would make sense. Yeah, the 5th seems early. So, but hopefully there are enough alums, or I should say students, in the greater Milwaukee area or maybe in the Chicago burbs that can drive up on a Saturday and catch that game, because they're going to need every loud Marquette voice they possibly can in that arena on Saturday against Villanova, because it's a tough opponent. But I'm hoping it's going to be a loud Marquette crowd, and Marquette can open the season with a W. That would be the second game of the season, but if they can get two wins this week. But yeah, I'm very optimistic that they can beat Nova on Saturday.
Yeah, I am as well. I'm gonna predict a win, something like, I don't know, 73-68.
All right, I'll go a little tighter. I'll say 74-71.
Okay, I like it. I like it.
By the way, the Seton Hall game did end, so Seton Hall did beat DePaul. So Seton Hall is 1-0. DePaul's off to an 0-1 start. Blew a home. They had a lead, but so we know right now as we're recording this, Seton Hall and Villanova both 1-0.
Right. And what do you think of Seton Hall, by
the way? Yeah, what do you think about Seton Hall, by the way? We talked earlier about teams that impressed us, didn't impress us. You know, Seton Hall was tabbed as a Final Four contender by some in the national media. They've definitely had a, you know, dealt with their fair share of losses. Now, they've had some injury concerns, most notably Miles Powell. But what do you make of Seton Hall right now as we start Big East play?
I mean, to be honest, and I think we can go back to the original podcast, I kind of always thought Seton Hall was a little bit overrated. You know, so I guess I'm not terribly surprised. Certainly the injury problems have plagued them. But I mean, again, I think they're a team. I think they're a yo-yo team, right? Like they're gonna have two or three games where they blow the doors off of somebody. I mean, hell, it could be Marquette, right? Mm-hmm. But I think they're also gonna have some doors where they or some games where they inexplicably lose to a St. John's or somebody else. I think they're gonna be inconsistent, especially as long as Mamu or Mimu or Mumu or whoever whatever his name is that's going to be a key piece that's going to be missing.
Just call him Sandro.
Sandro.
But yeah, Seton Hall kind of smells like a 10-8 team to me.
Yeah,
like they're like good enough to be one of the better teams in the Big East, but not good enough to win it.
Yeah, I just don't understand where the Final Four talk was coming from. Like, I get Miles Powell is a is a hot name, but. Yeah, I don't know. I struggle to see even on paper where they're a Final Four team.
All right, so just a little aside as we kind of get out of here, as I saw the Seton Hall game while it went final. So just to wrap it up, I think I'm cautiously going on the record 2-0 this week. I think two tight wins, but I think Marquette has shown me enough some progress offensively. I'm a little nervous about it. I my gut feeling is they're going to go 1-1, but I. As far as I'm going game by game, I am going to say they're going to win two games this week.
Okay, I like it. I like your opinion. I'm going to stay 1-1. Now I'm fully prepared for the 1-1 to be flipped. But yeah, I think they can beat Villanova, and I think they just lose a head scratcher to Creighton this week.
All right, fair enough. Like neither game would be surprising either way for me. 2-0 would not be surprising. 0-2 would be disappointing. But it would not be a stand on the ledge type situation for me. I think there's still enough positives about this team that, you know, they could have a good season in the Big East even if this week goes tough.
Yeah, I agree. It would be unsurprising to everyone but Marquette Twitter, which will of course erupt in
handle it maturely. I'm sure.
I'm sure it'll be reasoned and logical at all times.
Speaking of Marquette Twitter, we always welcome your feedback there. You can reach us there. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. You can leave your comments there. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And we appreciate that as well. Phil, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, let's have a happy new year and a even happier new day and a new year week.
All right. Happy new year, everyone. Happy 2020. Seashells and balloons.